I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Playing a long drive, there it is, number 500, the career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith.
Rollins slides, Rollins has won it, they stream out of the dugout, yeah. Rollins by yeah. Near third, this game is over.
It is out of here, 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Helen.
Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and NumberFire.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness, and we've got episode number 220 here for you, a special mailbag edition of Hittin' Season, an all-mailbag show, and since we're recording this here on Sunday night, I have got one of my two really good pals here to co-host with me. Justin Clue has the week off this week. He's doing some traveling. But with me, as always, as she always is on Sunday nights, is the great Liz Rocher. You can follow Liz on Twitter, at Liz Rocher. And Liz, now full-time at Yahoo Sports, and you probably saw her post this week that she has left us at The Good Fight, is no longer the managing editor of The Good Fight, but will remain with us in spirit, and she's gonna stay with us here on the podcast. So she's not going to go anywhere for you people. It's just us that are going to be crying ourselves to sleep every time we want to write something, and we go to whoever the next person is going to be and have to try and deal with this new person, whoever it's going to be. But Liz, welcome back to the podcast and congratulations.
Thank you. I have enough distance from it now that I'm not weeping constantly. It's not happy to go to Yahoo. I'm so thrilled. It's, you know, I've said to a lot of people, I never even dared to dream I could do writing full time. Like ever did I think that was a possibility. So this is bizarre, but you know, The Good Fight is where I started. It's where I, you know, I learned how to write about sports. I got all of my chances. That's where people found me. And not being there is weird. It's been almost 8 years of my life. So it's very strange, but it's, you know, it's an exciting new world ahead of me. So
yeah. Well, it couldn't happen to a more talented person. I mean, you're a terrific writer. You know your stuff, and it's just, I know you've been grinding there part time for a long time now, and it's only right and good and just that they brought you on full time, and our loss is their gain. And you know, I know we're not going to lose you, really. I mean, you're going to be around. I think I don't anticipate you're not going to leave the Slack channel, are you? The Good Fight Slack channel.
No, I would not.
Yeah. Okay.
Justin, actually, that was the first thing I asked. Justin, please don't make me leave the Slack channel. I'll have no one to talk to.
No, we wouldn't know what to do with you out of the Slack channel. We need you there. So we will always have access to Liz Rocher, and she's going to stay with us here on the podcast, which is very cool. That wasn't a sure thing, by the way. So it's very cool that that the Yahoo folks are letting you hang out here with us on Sunday nights and allowing you to continue to do continued success with Justin on the Good Fight podcast feed as well. And you're going to be doing some other stuff with us for the Patreon. You and Justin are going to do a special late night continued success. And I'd like to hop on that too a couple of different times, you know, whenever we do that. And we'll involve some of the listening audience when we do those. So that's great. Yeah. Yeah. So Liz is not going anywhere. And again, this is a mailbag show here. So we're taking your Phillies questions. And what we did to start off this mailbag is we went to our $10 a month Patreon tier members first, because one of the things that you know, we so much value the Patreon contributors to Hittin' Season. And all of you who listen to the podcasts that come on the Good Fight podcast feed through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts, we love you guys. We love all of you. I mean, it's so amazing that you guys tune in and download these podcasts every week, and we're so thrilled and thankful to all of you for doing that. But we also have as you've heard us mention, a Patreon for Hittin' Season. And for the folks who subscribe on the $10 a month tier, the $10 a month tier, among a lot of other benefits, get first priority on all mailbag shows. So we get their questions up first. So if you're interested in getting that special treatment as well, it's kind of like, you know, you're flying on an airline and you get that special first class VIP. You get to skip past the rest of the schlubs waiting with their suitcases in line. You get to just walk right up into that special little area off to the side and, you know, check in and go on and off and, you know, get yourself a nice cocktail before your flight. That's essentially what this is, Liz.
I was gonna say the continued success after dark can be your first class cocktail.
Oh yes, indeed.
Yes, that is our mm-hmm. 2-drink minimum show.
That's right. That's right. And the $10 a tier people, we're going to be able to get those guys to participate on the show as well. So that's another benefit for being a $10 tier member. So again, go to patreon.com/hittinseason if you want to do that and
be part of the club.
Yes, yes. And that's the thing with the Patreon. We want to start moving in that direction, is more involvement with you guys, you know, on a personal level, you know, do some other things as the fall rolls along. All the list of the different things that are going to be there are on patreon.com/hittinseason on the different tiers. So if you're a $5 a month member, consider jumping up to 10. If you haven't signed on to the Patreon at all, take a look at what's there and see if anything strikes your fancy. But these first 5 questions or so, maybe is it 5 questions? I'm not exactly sure how many it is, but these first few questions are going to be from our $10 a month Patreon tier members. We got a ton of great Phillies questions this week, so thank you to the Patreon folks, and thank you to my Twitter and followers and Liz's Twitter followers for coming through with some good questions. And I'm going to stop talking now, and let's start answering some questions here as we enter the Phillies offseason. Ryan Connors, one of our Patreon folks, asked, the StatCast broadcast ESPN did during the wildcard game got me thinking, why doesn't the Phillies broadcast bother trying to explain some of the advanced stats to fans during the games? It's become such a huge part of the way the Phillies operate, and you've seen a big backlash from fans, probably stoked by talk radio. I love John Kruk, but him talking about how no one bunts anymore is exhausting, and there's almost no mention of even basic things like OPS Plus, ERA Plus, or WAR. Stats like these are pretty easy to explain and give great context for how a player is doing compared to batting average or RBI. Seems like a perfect thing for Murph to do during a cutaway to him or something. What are your guys' thoughts? And Liz, I know, you know, we've talked about this kind of stuff a lot on the Slack channel, and I think even David Cohen has written something like this earlier in the year for the Good Fight, talking about mainly the lack of enthusiasm from some of the Phillies announcers. But I think the point that Ryan is getting to here is a really good one. If the Phillies are going to be one of the most analytically based teams in baseball, and you're going to listen to Gabe Kapler after games come out and talking about FIP, shouldn't these guys know what these stats are and help educate the fan base so they understand when we talk about analytics, these are the numbers we're looking at and these are why they help us?
I mean, you're right, but these aren't the guys to do that.
That's fair.
You can't expect these guys to do that if it's not something that they care about. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, that's not what they were hired to do. If the Phillies want someone to do that, they need to hire someone to do that on the broadcast. That's just,
no, that's
it.
True.
You know, I'm not, and I think they can enhance the broadcast. I thought the StatCast broadcast for the wild card game, I thought it was atrocious. Jason Benetti is an incredible announcer. Mike Petriello is terrible. I also think he sucks in general. Personally,
I like Mike.
I'm not a fan of him or his analysis for the most part. I think it's reductive and overly simplistic and a whole lot of other things. But I thought it was kind of obnoxious for the most part. And
I did not get a chance to see it. I was watching the main Fox broadcast. I didn't see the StatCast. But was that a glorification of the StatCast numbers, or was that Sabermetrics? Because
no, StatCast, it was a lot of StatCast stuff. And I have big issues with StatCast. But they also tried to incorporate some advanced metrics, but it was a lot of like graphs and things like that. And, you know, my fiance is a, you know, radar engineer. He knows his stuff. This is what he does. So I can't lie and say I'm not influenced by that, but it's mostly because I think he's right. I think that the StatCast broadcast was super obnoxious. And if that's what, you know, we're going towards for broadcasts, I think that's dumb. That makes me want to just put on ballpark sounds, which is, you know, fine.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, that, you know, we see on the major, on the Phillies broadcast that they use a lot of StatCast stuff, but it's really the basic stuff, you know, the launch angle, the exit velocity and all this kind of stuff.
Well, and that stuff, you know, is meaningless. That stuff is meaningless.
It doesn't mean much.
OPS plus, ERA plus, or, you know, I'm a fan of DRA. I think that, you know, some talk about catcher framing, that's a type of thing that could be really useful. I agree that, you know, I had to explain to my grandmother at one point, you know, about advanced metrics, sabermetrics, you know, and one of the things I told her was, you know, these are things that can be used to tell you the strengths and weaknesses of players, to help you, you know, use them in better situations. You know, it tells you things that you may not have known. And I think that's a great way to look at it, you know, and I think that's part of what Ryan Connors is saying, that it's some of these things can be so valuable. I just don't think the guys they have on staff right now, at least on the TV broadcast, are equipped to explain it. And I think
they're not.
I think if Scott Fransky was paired with somebody else, I think maybe he would. But, you know, I don't necessarily know if he's kind of, not that he's not up to it, but it's just not the type of broadcast he wants to do. And that's,
it's not what he wants to do.
In the end, that's what's important. You know, it's what these guys want to do.
Well, and you don't have to do a whole broadcast where all you're talking about are these numbers.
Oh,
but,
no, of course
you
not.
Know, it's got to, you know, you've got to, they've got to be able to figure out a way to mesh the in-game storytelling with some of the advanced numbers, but you have to want to know that stuff. I mean, and Tom McCarthy, I think he's a people pleaser. I think he wants to please. I think he wants to do more. Or, I mean, I think he, you know, I think Tom McCarthy's intentions are good. I don't see him as a guy who thinks baseball stinks now, and, you know, that he's, you know, one of those guys that, you know, baseball just sucks the way it's played right now. I don't perceive him to be that way.
No,
I perceive Kruk to be that way.
I don't think we have an opinion. He's not the type of guy to give an opinion ever.
Exactly. And Kruk and Ben Davis obviously played the game two decades ago, and so they are not down with learning this new style. And you're right. I think that there would need to be a change. You'd need to bring at least one person in who could at least talk about this stuff intellectually, both on the radio broadcast and on the TV broadcast. And I think I agree with you. I don't think it's the type of broadcast Fransky wants to do. I don't think they would need to, but that's the thing. I don't think they would need to revamp the entire broadcast. I just think, I remember, you know, working half a season with Larry Anderson, who was the most miserable guy broadcasting baseball in for any team in any medium this year, and that's without me even hearing anybody else. He just sounded miserable the entire season. There's no way he's going to learn how to be fluent in this stuff, and it hurts the Phillies. It hurts the organization, because this organization is trending in this direction so much, and the face of your franchise is an analytically driven manager who spews this stuff and spouts this stuff in post-game press conferences and pre-game to reporters. If you don't have the broadcasts backing that up, you're hurting the manager. You're hurting the product.
I mean,
that's what's so mind-numbing about it.
I don't want, you know, dead-eyed agreement robots. That's not what I want. I don't want, you know, I don't want a booth full of that. You know, I don't want apologists.
No, not at all.
No, and I think there's I would like it if, you know, there would be a way for them to just talk about some of the principles behind what he may be doing without sounding like it's just, you know, the Gabe Kapler Stan broadcast.
But they got to be speaking the same language, you know. They got to be using the same terminology. They don't have to agree, but you can't have the broadcast speaking Spanish and the franchise speaking French. You know what I mean?
That's
it doesn't
true.
Work. It just doesn't work. That's my point. So I think it's a great question,
yes.
Ryan. I think
you've talked a lot about it already.
Right. Yeah, we have. And I think Liz is right. I think you need to bring in some new personnel and maybe switch some personnel out in order to really make that happen. And I don't anticipate that happening. Although Comcast is in charge of the TV crew. They can make a change if they want to, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. Next question, John Barrett, one of our Patreon folks. What do you think will become of Carlos Santana? Did Andy McPhail's remarks about the poor defense affect your expectations? Because Hoskins is definitely coming back to first base, right?
I have no clue.
I don't either, no. But I do think, I will say this. I think based on how things ended over the last 3 weeks of the season, we saw a lot of Rhys Hoskins at first base. Now, part of that might be because Michael Franco was hurt for a lot of the last part of the season, and they had to move Carlos Santana to third base. And I got to say, as critical as I was of Carlos Santana at third base, he was okay.
He actually made a couple of plays.
Yeah, and he made a couple of really nice plays. I'll put it to you this way, Liz. He was at least as good as Michael Franco defensively at third base, I think.
I don't think we saw enough of him because...
Yeah, it's a small sample.
As flat-footed as Franco can be sometimes, he's actually quite athletic out there when it calls for it. I think people give him a bad rap a lot of times defensively, but I certainly think that, you know, given enough time, they would be roughly at the same level. You know, it was just highlighted by the fact that Santana played such really poor first base defense this year.
Yeah.
On the whole, he wasn't very good. I know he had some great plays, but man, there were some big biffs out there.
Yeah. No, he didn't come as advertised because he was advertised as an above average defensive first baseman. And we didn't see that from him. I mean, we don't see the accuracy of the throws he would make when he would whip the ball over to the other side of the infield after making the third out, which really started to annoy me by the end of the year. I don't know if that was just because I was getting crusty about the season as a whole, but I was like, just stop doing that. Maybe he was practicing because he knew he'd get to play third base. And so he's working his arm out. I will say this. I do think Hoskins is coming back to first base next year.
I hope so.
Because it's a way to improve the outfield defense without having to bring somebody else in.
It's where he belongs.
Yes.
It's where he belongs. It's
yes.
just the end
it's
of
where
the
he
sentence.
Wants to play too. He wants to play first base. He doesn't want to play the outfield.
He never looks comfortable out there.
No. And it's a disaster out there. And the entire outfield defense, everybody defensively was bad last year. Odubel Herrera has been playing center field now for 3 years. No excuse for his defense to be as poor as it was this year.
It was rough sometimes this year. I was really disappointed. Ugh.
Yeah. His whole season was just a disaster. And maybe you wonder if he took his offensive struggles out into the field with him. That certainly is human nature, and I could understand that. You can't excuse it, but and with Nick Williams, I see a guy who's got a lot of physical talent out there. He just doesn't know how to read the baseball in the corners.
That's also disappointing. I was hoping that he would improve a little bit because he made such improvements as a hitter. I was so encouraged by his season on the whole. I just wish his defense had caught up. It's like he's like a giraffe a little bit. There are times it looks like he doesn't know how to use his limbs.
That's right. That was always my criticism of Dom Brown defensively in right field.
And I don't think Nick Williams is that bad. Brown was pretty bad out there sometimes. But yeah, it looks like there are times like his legs get crossed up like they're too long. He's like, wow, look at these things I have attached to my chest. They're these long, flappy. How do I get the... It's like it looks like he literally was just a newborn giraffe out there sometimes. It would be really great for the Phillies to find a way to improve that next year because they really need it. Yeah. I mean, depending on what happens in the offseason.
Yeah. Well, if you get Bryce Harper, you throw Bryce Harper in right field. And you know, I think Roman Quinn, it's always a danger to depend on Roman Quinn because he is so fragile. But I think Roman Quinn does factor into this team's plans next year. I don't know if it's as a starter. I don't know if it's as their starting center fielder. We have a question coming up in a few minutes talking about, you know, certain members of the Phillies core or teams, players that have been here the last few years and where they might end up. That could factor in a lot to what happens with Roman Quinn. But he's a guy that I think that you're going to see more of next year because his defense is so good. And you know, if Nick Williams sticks around, maybe he moves to left field and maybe he does a little bit better there. But Williams in a corner outfield, he just has trouble reading the ball off the bat and getting to a spot and then looking for the ball. He's kind of a guy who tries to track the ball the whole way, and you can't do that in the majors. What's going to happen is exactly what you described. He's going to get his legs all crossed up. He's going to fumble all over himself. He's going to look bad trying to get to balls out there, and he's not going to get to about half the balls he probably could. So John, to answer your question, I think Santana probably is this team's third baseman next year. And I think that does move Rhys Hoskins to first base, unless there's a trade coming where they acquire a third baseman, or they get Manny Machado and Machado for some reason agrees to play third base, which again, I think Manny Machado could come here. I don't think he's playing third base here. I think he's playing shortstop.
Yeah. Then, but I think if you put Manny Machado at shortstop and you have Carlos Santana, I think you'd be willing to, boot third base for a little while and have, and hope that Machado's range can help cover a little bit until you find a better third baseman and you trade Carlos Santana, or you just eat the money. I think if the Phillies find a better option, if they have one of Harper or especially Machado, if they have both, I think that makes it a lot more likely that they just eat the money if they have a chance of actually building a winning team.
Yeah,
they might not want to admit embarrassment if it ended embarrassingly, but if they're doing well, who cares?
Right, and the fans aren't going to care. The fans might ridicule Klintak a little bit, but I think they'll be happy if the team's improved. I think Carlos Santana, I think what he does at the plate skill-wise fits with what the team wants to do, but just as a player himself, just doesn't fit. There's no good place for him on this team. And you said that – I'll give you credit, Liz. You said this last offseason that you didn't really like the fit of Santana on this team when they signed him.
Yeah, and I refrained from really harping on that for most of the year because I didn't want to be that person, but I think that sort of bore itself out with how uncomfortable everyone was around the diamond pretty much completely for the entire year.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see fewer players out of position next year. Although Gabe Kapler did say in that Angelo Cataldi interview, he asked what Kingery's best position was, and Kapler said shortstop.
For the love of God.
What are they doing?
This is my worry. I'm going to talk about this for a minute. That's my worry, is that this season they believe that the results were completely due to the fact they didn't have good enough players. And they're just completely dedicated to their decision making, and they're going to do it all again. And that's a way to go. I'm not saying it's not. That is certainly something you could do. But why would you? When things turned out so badly, maybe find a comfortable place and then start experimenting out from there. Maybe don't start so far afield.
Yeah.
I'm excited for and also dreading finding out what's going to happen next year. It's such a mix of emotions.
I know. It's good. The winter meetings are going to be so crazy, I think, or just, the entire process leading up to that, because there's just so much to do with this team. Oh, it's going to be a blast. It's going to be a scene, man. It's going to be great. Let's move on. Brian Tennedy, one of our Patreon folks, asks, if Pete McCannon managed the Phillies this year, how does the team finish?
I don't know.
You want to start off with this one?
I don't.
This is an un... Sure, it's unknowable, right? I mean, Pete McCannon had his weaknesses, Liz. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you could argue that in the middle of the season, when the starting pitching was propping everything up and a lot of Gabe's decisions were working really well, I'm not sure Pete McCannon wins a lot of those games in the middle of the season.
No, but I also think things might have evened out near the end.
Yeah, that's the thing. So
maybe they would have finished pretty much the same.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think it would have happened differently so that maybe it doesn't feel like as negative a finish.
Like we're having our pulled out of our belly buttons every single time we watch a game.
Pete McCannon might have been able to avoid the unpleasant process, but I don't know. I think they probably finish with about the same amount of wins. I think that's probably the case. And Brian had one other one. Also, going into the offseason, whose jersey is the safest to buy outside of Nola or Hoskins?
I have two answers. I want to see what you say first.
I would say Sir Anthony Dominguez, but I am really wary of buying a jersey, not only of a relief pitcher, but a young relief pitcher. And so that's
daring you are.
That would be daring. I would probably go with Jorge Alfaro.
All right. That was my other answer. I had two. I wanted to see if you'd pick one. So, okay. Because I think Alfaro, they love Alfaro.
Yeah. And I, you know, you look at his numbers, he actually had a pretty good season.
I know. It seemed extreme with all those strikeouts. My Lord. But that's just who he is.
Yeah. And he did a lot of damage when he made contact.
Yeah. He just has to make contact more. I think if he can learn how to make contact more, that would change his game for the better. And he's young enough to learn. It's not like he can't learn. He spent the year really focusing on his framing, which I think he really improved at. I think
he
became such a great framer as the year went on. I was really sad he was so injured at the end of the season, and he didn't sort of get a chance to finish that out. I think it might have helped things a little bit. But I think my answer outside of Alfaro would be Scott Kingery. You don't sign him. You don't sign a kid to a contract like that unless you intend to keep him.
That's a good one. And Kingery did not leap to mind because, and this is one of the sad things
about Kingery. We
don't
want to think about him anymore.
Well, that's the thing. This is what's sad about Kingery is that last year, at the end of last year, we just were so excited about Scott Kingery.
Yeah.
You know, we were so excited about his future, about the talent, about the possibility. He was one of the guys that they're going to build around, and he had a great spring training, and so everybody was excited. And then the team signs him to the deal and brings him up and has him keep playing. And you know, I give the kid credit for sticking it out this year and continuing to grind. Maybe I think it probably ends up being good for him in the long run. You know, it'll help him.
I think so too.
And you mentioned that too on a previous podcast, how proud you were of Kingery. But
yeah, I know that I felt later that sounded patronizing. I hope it didn't.
I don't think it did.
I don't mean it that way because it's your first major league season, and you're under Gabe Kapler, who's doing this for the first time. He's weird and different. He's unlike any manager you've ever had. He's sticking you at this position you don't know. You know, all this noise around you all the time of everybody, you know, because that's what baseball is. Half of baseball is learning how to block out, you know, the everything else around you.
Yeah.
And I admire him for how he did this year. You know, it wasn't easy. And we were all we weren't necessarily hard on him as much as hard on the decision to keep him around. Because
it's
cruel to a certain extent.
Well, he's struggling. You know, you don't want to see a young kid struggle like that. You think it's going to be better for him to go down. And he was hurting the team for a good stretch there just because of he was playing every day, but wasn't playing well enough. But for a lot of the season, they didn't have a choice. They didn't have another shortstop to play there. And so they were really stuck with him. But during those times when they did have a choice, keeping him up, I don't think really helped. But I do think I didn't think of Kingery, but it's a great choice because he is going to be around for a while. And I do think he is going to be good. It's just, again, like the team, Kingery's season has left a bad taste in everybody's mouth. And he's kind of become a name you snicker at and sneer at kind of right now. And that is really unfortunate. And I don't think it's going to last. I think he's going to bounce back. He may never be an all-star player, but, you know, I think he's going to be a better player next year than he was this year. So
and
hopefully not at shortstop, though.
Yeah, I think he'll definitely have the thirst to prove himself, especially since now he's gotten all that first year crap out of the way.
Yeah, and he's made improvements every year he was in the minors. You know, he wasn't great every year to start off the minors. He'd always make improvements, and so this is obviously the hardest level to do that at, and so we'll see if he's able to pull that up. But Kingery as a jersey is a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, Steve Appleman, one of our Patreon folks, asks, what's your level of trust in the front office this offseason to make the right moves? I know Middleton is aggressive, and if it were up to him, the Phillies would probably have both Machado and Harper here, but I don't think that's in the cards for McPhail and Klentak. Do you trust Klentak to acquire a big-name free agent this offseason or make the right moves for the future of the franchise? And Liz, I think, you know, we just addressed it a few seconds ago that, you know, if they're going to make the decision that Kingery is a shortstop long-term, I do have some trust issues with the front office and the decision-making process. You could also look at the Carlos Santana decision and wonder if that was a good decision. The Pat Nashak and Tommy Hunter signings as free agents this offseason. Hunter just, you know, I don't know what the numbers are going to end up looking like. I did not like his addition to the bullpen. He had a few good stretches here and there, but he was largely unreliable. And Nashak was pretty effective, but again, I just don't love him as a player. I think he's kind of I'm not sure he's a great locker room clubhouse guy. And we were all calling for Jake Arrieta to get signed, and they did sign him, and that just didn't work out. To me, I think I do trust Klentak to get a big-time free agent, because we saw he does have the ability to sign big free agents. And really, that whole issue is just throwing money at Harper or Machado and just trying to get the players to help recruit these guys and convince them that Gabe Kapler is a good manager to play for and all that. That's not really, I think, where Matt Klentak is going to make his money. Where Klentak is going to make his money is figuring out what to do with these different players that they have and how to improve both the offense and the defense at the same time. Which of the core do you let go? Which do you keep? Making those decisions on, do you keep the same starting rotation for next year? We've got some questions coming up about starting rotation. I think it's fair to wonder whether or not Matt Klentak is going to make all the right moves this winter, but my level of trust is probably on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the least amount of trust I can have, 10 being the most amount of trust. I'm probably at about a 6.5, Liz. Where are you?
That feels about right. I mean, I've got concerns. And I think they just didn't want to make any decisions. And I guess, you know, in the end, I don't blame them, you know, for not wanting to do that last year. They wanted to spend time figuring out who everybody was, but it didn't really felt like they did that. It felt like they just sort of continued to kick the can down the road, and they just stuck people where they felt like it. You know, I know that that's an oversimplification for sure, but it just didn't feel like they actually they're prepared to make any decisions. So that's why I'm concerned, because this season was one of those, they wanted to have their cake and eat it too. Sign some free agents, look attractive, but play these guys, you know, different, be very experimental. And I don't necessarily know if that combination was successful. And my major concern is that I'm not sure, I said it earlier, whether or not they're learning from it, because you know, if they see no problem in the decisions they made, they're just going to continue to do the same things again, mm-hmm. because they didn't feel that the circumstances were right the first time around, instead of questioning the decision itself. That's my main concern.
And Klentak did say major changes were coming, although none of the field staff is going to be moving on. It's going to be the same coaching staff next year. So you wonder what it is that they saw that they're going to make changes to. It's mm-hmm. probably some of the tactics they used, maybe some of the information they used. I don't know exactly what it is. I didn't love the idea of them using the opener in terms of position players this year, when they would start off with Justin Bour getting two at bats and then swap him out. But there's a rationale where that does make sense. A lot of what they did this year, you just need better players to do it. And you know, they wanted to be the Dodgers and the Cubs, and they didn't have the horses for that.
I guess I can see that, but like my concern is that they're not going to do any real interrogation of the decisions, regardless of whether or not they had the players to accomplish it. Because I don't necessarily think that not having the great players was really the source of all their problems this year.
No, it wasn't the source of all their problems. It was a big part of their problem, but it was certainly not the source of all their problems. And I think they did make some decisions that hampered them a little bit. I will say that part of Klentak has really never made a big trade.
Nope.
I mean, it was the Ken Giles trade is still the biggest trade of his career. And I think that's worked out fairly well for them. They've gotten a lot of mileage out of Vince Velasquez.
Yeah.
And
keep
really
forgetting that's how he came to us.
Yeah. That's how he came to us, and I think they've gotten all they could have hoped for in terms of winning that trade. Whether Velasquez turns out to be a longtime starter, he's been in the rotation now for 3 years. He had a pretty decent season this year. He struggled at the end as he passed innings limits, but I was happy with Velasquez for most of the season. A few big terrible outings aside, he pitched under a 4 ERA, which is all I really want from him. High strikeouts, under 4 ERA, and with a better defense behind him, all of those starters would have had better numbers. But that being said, I do think Klentak has had some bad luck as well. He got Charlie Morton. He saw something in Charlie Morton the year before he broke out.
That one's going to haunt him for years. I bet you 50 bucks. If he talks to us in 10, 12 years, that's going to be one that haunts him.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that in his second start with the Phillies, he blew out his hamstring and missed the rest of the year. Houston signs him for the same reasons that Matt Klentak signed him, and he's turned into one of the best starting pitchers in baseball. Last year, Klentak goes after Clay Buchholz, who was a disaster while he was here. He ends up being hurt, misses the whole season, comes back for the Diamondbacks, and has a tremendous 2018 season. He has not gotten lucky with the reclamation projects that he's chosen, but some of that is luck. The process worked for those two particular pitchers. So in those particular cases, I do have a little bit more confidence in Matt Klentak because, you know, you throw out some bad luck. The Phillies might have actually really lucked out or had some real good success with some of those reclamation projects.
Agreed.
So, I 6.5 out of 10, I think, is where I am on confidence with the front office moving forward here. The money's going to help, guys. It's going to help make a lot of decisions easier. And then here's our last Patreon question. Then we'll get into some of the Twitter mailbag. Q-Sort asks, everyone knows that the only parts of the core that are solid are Nola and Hoskins. I know player development will be huge, but that aside, how do you feel about them buying their way into contention? I know that's kind of what they're forced to do right now, but there will be a time down the road that money is tighter, and the teams that had better homegrown cores, Atlanta, maybe even Washington, may have longevity. Liz, let me have you answer this first. What do you think about the Phillies buying their way into contention? Are you worried that they might build a team from outside pieces more than inside pieces, and is that a long-term problem?
No. I mean, if they're buying players that are old, then yes, of course, that's a problem. But if you're buying Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, they're young, and that turns into your core. They're young enough that they are your core. Like, it doesn't matter if someone – like, Nick Williams came over in a trade. He spent the vast majority of his development time with the Rangers. I don't remember where he came from.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
Yeah, because he was part of the Cole Hamels trade.
Right.
You know, like Vince Velasquez, he's part of our core, theoretically. And he spent most of his time with the Astros. And I mean, that's every team is built differently. And we've got some really extreme examples right now with the Yankees and the Red Sox who the Yankees. That's going to be a team that's studied forever because it's just a ridiculous amount of talent they've assembled completely homegrown. Just like the Cubs, it's just a lot. Most teams don't get that lucky. Yeah. You know, you look at the Brewers right now.
Exactly the team I was going to talk about. Yep, go for it.
They traded for Christian Yelich. They signed Lorenzo Cain. They signed Mike Moustakas. They spent more stuff over the trade deadline on a few other pieces. They've got Wade
Jonathan
Miley.
Scope.
You know, they've got, like, your core is whatever it is for that year. You can buy anything. That's the thing. People are obsessed right now with the idea of homegrown cores, and it's because front offices have, again, poisoned us to think that that is the best way. That is the cheapest way. A homegrown core like that is not, it's not the best way, you know, period. It's the cheapest way to do it because the Yankees have a very small payroll right now. And you look at all the talent they have, but you look at the Brewers and they have a lot of talent as well. And a decent amount of it is young still. And you know what you can do if you have money and there are good players on the market, you can buy them. And if there are players you want and you have players you can give up like the Phillies do, you can trade for them and get yourself a Christian Yelich. Like, there is no right way to do it. There's no best way. There is no right way. You know, you can build a core and have them be good year after year, and you think that's the best way because because you look at that Yankees team, for example. Some of that was homegrown, but they also bought a lot of players. They signed a lot of players. CeCe Sabathia did not come up with them. Masahiro Tanaka isn't even from this country.
That's right.
Like,
right.
You have to, like, one of my least favorite players in baseball, Aroldis Chapman. He's part of their core now. They signed him. They signed him, traded him, and then signed him back. Like, there's so many different ways to do it. And I really reject the notion that buying your way into contention is a lesser way to do it because you can make a team out of anything if you're willing to spend enough money and spend enough prospects. And that's what the Phillies did 10 years ago. To extend that window as far as they could. They didn't win another World Series, but that rarely happens.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. And I think here's the thing. People have to realize you want to blend. You want to supplement a good homegrown core with free agency. But sometimes you need to go out and get the superstar. And that's what the Phillies are going to do this winter, is go star hunting. They're going to go after Machado or Harper. And again, like Andy McPhail said, if they don't get one of those guys, it'll be incredibly disappointing. There will be some other players the following offseason, and then you'd hope that they can get some additional help in other ways through trades. And we're not – here's the thing with trades, is that once the winter meetings start, players you would never have dreamed would be available suddenly become available. And I'll throw this out at you. Would anybody be upset if they traded for Mike Trout? Of course not. Mike Trout has a full no-trade clause, by the way. I don't know how many people are aware of that. Mm-hmm. What if he refuses to sign an extension with the Angels this offseason? And what if he says, the only team I want to play for is the Phillies?
Why are you
and
doing
pulls
this?
A and pulls a Giancarlo Stanton? Is anybody going to have a problem with trading for Mike Trout? Of course not.
Why are you saying these things?
because I like to stir some people up, my friend.
Everybody know, if Mike Trout doesn't sign an extension with the Angels, I will admit that I was completely wrong. I will say something ridiculous on this podcast, because he strikes me as the kind of player that A, wants to play for the same franchise for his entire career, B, really likes being with the Angels and not being with the Dodgers. There's a big difference. Yeah. And C, he's not stupid. Do you think he wants to come back to his hometown team and play here?
I don't think he does.
No.
I mean, I think
does he want
I think
that
there's a part
burst?
Let me say this. I think there's a part of him that does. I think there's a part of him that loves the idea of playing for Philadelphia, but he also knows the fans of Philadelphia, and he gets to still be a part of the Philadelphia sports community while being completely on the other side of the country. And if he comes here and struggles or fails, which isn't likely to happen because he's Mike Trout, but that's crushing. You know what I mean? That would be hard. But, you know, it's just something I only mention it. And we can talk about Mike Trout as the winter goes along. Once we know more about contract negotiations and all that kind of stuff, I don't want to talk about Mike Trout for the rest of this podcast, because you could certainly do an entire hour long podcast on Mike Trout. My only point is that for the right player, it's great to go outside the organization, even if you got to spend big to do it. And really, the Phillies have set themselves up to be able to do that payroll-wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to have to pay Aaron Nola at some point here, and hopefully it's this offseason. Rhys Hoskins is probably going to get, you know, paid at some point. Maybe not a long extension now that he's with Scott Boras, but there will be some homegrown guys here. There will be some young guys that they're not going to have to get from outside the organization that are going to be with us for a while. So.
And let's be clear, one more thing about the money issue, that the Phillies right now have an insanely low payroll. They could give both Bryce Harper and Manny Machado $50 million a year each and have enough room to add at least two other players at $10 million a year before hitting the luxury tax threshold, which, for the record, I don't think John Middleton cares about at all.
He may not, but and maybe it was Andy
McPhail. He will throw whatever money he can at this team to make them win.
I don't think that's happening, and I think they will try their very best to get one, but I would highly doubt that they get both. Highly doubt that they even try to go after both. But
are you nuts? You know, of course they're going to go after both.
I think if they get one, they don't try to keep signing the other one.
Really?
For enough. They're not going to sign two for.
Why not just throw their hat in the ring?
Because you heard Andy McPhail talking at the news conference about wanting to have payroll flexibility.
Oh, whatever. Last year he said at the press conference that they weren't signing any other players, only if the right deal presented itself, blah, blah, blah. He is saying whatever PR stuff he's supposed to say. I think John Middleton controls this. And if he says, go make an offer to both of them, that's what they're doing.
Well, they'll do it if he tells him to.
I think he's going
to
tell him to.
There's no doubt about that, but that'll be interesting. Oh, my gosh. Now you're starting to get me a little excited about that possibility. I've crossed that possibility out in my mind. We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
John Middleton is an insane person with an insane amount of money. He wants to be king of mountain again.
But they didn't get 3 million fans last year, Liz. They can't spend money.
They had a huge... Oh, my God.
I'm joking, because that's one of Andy McPhail's rationales that I absolutely held... Just laughed
also
at.
Also bullshit.
was like, come on.
Complete. But they had one of the biggest year-over-year jumps in a year where MLB attendance fell. And their team, like, if they had been in it to the end, they would have gotten even more. Like, my God, for him to denigrate, it's so stupid. Just stop having end-of-year press conferences if all you're going to say is ridiculous crap, Andy McPhail.
Yeah, they were both Klentak and McPhail's end-of-the-year press conferences were not very good.
Lord.
From a tone standpoint. Anyway, all right, let's see if we can't knock out a few of these Twitter mailbag questions a little bit quickly.
Yes,
here.
Yes.
Let's get through as many of these as we can before we finish up. We got about 15 minutes left here in the podcast, so let's see what we can do. CK2004 at CKeller29 says, finally... he had a bunch of different questions, so that's why I threw the finally in there. So anyway, scratch that. Not hating on Gabe or anything, but how long is Kapler and the coaching staff's leash heading into 2019? I think this is a fascinating question. Here's my take on this.
Give me.
This is my hot take.
Uh-huh.
Okay? If this team has a losing record at the end of May, Gabe Kapler's fired.
Ooh, that's spicy.
Because listen to this. I mean... The fan base right now is almost in full revolt, okay? And it's mostly focused, to a large degree, unfairly on Gabe Kapler. I mean, I think Gabe Kapler deserves a lot of criticism for how the season finished off. I think some of it has gone way over the top here over the last few weeks because everybody's just upset. But here's the deal. If they go out and they sign a couple of big free agents and they get a team together that – everybody looks at and says, this should be a playoff team. And this team is under 500 at the end of May, especially if they're like 10 games under 500 at the end of May. I think he's gone.
I would say all-star break. I don't know. If I'm going to jump on this boat, which I'm not sure I'm doing, I would say it would be the all-star break because you want to, I would say end of May, it's 2 months. That's something, but you know, you saw Bryce Harper this year have quite the slump, and we know he's better than that. And so I would give players a chance to sort of get themselves out of it. But yeah, I mean, I have a hard time disagreeing with the fact with that he would be in serious trouble. I just want everyone to remember, though, I don't think Gabe is doing anything that the front office hasn't approved of completely, or hasn't at least directed him to do to a certain extent. Because
that may be true, but it might not be what John Middleton wants him to do.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
I guess it depends on who holds the power at the time. And, you know, the power struggle between GM and owner and, you know, president of baseball operations, it's fascinating because we know so little about how it works these days. Because the owners are really the ones that hold all the cards. They can do whatever they want. And, you know, you hire a guy like Andy McPhail, you to a certain extent, you commit yourself to his vision. But if you don't like it, you are going to change it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I think it's, I think Liz and I both agree the leash is not terribly long if there are struggles in 2019. Super Bowl 52 champs at LCD_Philly22 had a couple here, but let's see what we can knock out here. This is a little bit like what we talked about a few minutes ago, talking about some of the Phillies core who will be here next year. He asks, what's the possible haul for a Michael Franco, Cesar Hernandez, and Odubel Herrera? With all three of these guys right now, and it was interesting, when I talked to Jim Salisbury on the last podcast, he was of the opinion that Michael Franco is almost certainly gone. It's not even, and that Franco seems to know that he's gone.
I wouldn't disagree.
That he's going to be traded. And I don't either. I think now is his trade value is at its highest, such as it is. And that's the same. And with Cesar Hernandez and Odubel Herrera, you'd be trading him at a low point here. I think let's rank these three in order of most likely not to be here next year. Why don't you knock it out first, and we'll see if I agree. Michael Franco, Cesar Hernandez, Odubel Herrera, most likely not to be here in what order?
I think that's almost right. I think it'd be Michael Franco, Odubel Herrera, and Cesar Hernandez. But I guess you would be trading, you know, Herrera and Hernandez at a low point, but it's not like they don't have a past track record of being good. I think whatever discount you'd get for a down year would be minimal.
Well, with Cesar Hernandez, he's in arbitration. He's going to get a nice little bump next year to around $7 or $8 million,
which he deserves,
which
he deserves.
But But do you are you going to get the offensive production from him for that money at second base? Considering there are a ton. Here's the thing with Cesar Hernandez, trading Hernandez may be even harder this offseason than last offseason because there are a number of really good second base options in free agency. So that's going to factor into potential landing spots for Hernandez. So in that regard, I can see why you ordered them Franco, Herrera, Cesar Hernandez. I think it's probably. I mean, you mentioned, I'm sorry, you went Franco, Herrera, Hernandez. I'm going to go the order in which I said it initially. Franco most likely, Cesar Hernandez second most, Odubel Herrera third most, only because I think that I really think they are going to put Kingery at second base next year. And I think they want to make that happen.
I hope so.
And I think maybe that's more hope than common sense talking. And I think Odubel Herrera probably as the best player of those three holds more value maybe in a corner outfield spot. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go out and get Bryce Harper and you have Odubel Herrera, it's putting a lot of faith, unless you're going to get a second outfielder, I think it's putting a lot of faith in Roman Quinn to be a starter. And so you are going to need a center fielder next year, unless you're giving that job to Roman Quinn full-time, which it doesn't sound, I don't know. They really like Quinn. When he's healthy, he's pretty productive and exciting. So a lot of that is still up in the air, but with Hernandez, I think they just take pennies on the dollar for him. They haven't wanted to do that in the past, but just to clear out some of this logjam,
they have to. I mean,
they've got to figure out a way to get rid of some of these guys.
These are the types of hard decisions that they have to make. That you know that I was frustrated with them not making last year, but understood that what they were trying to do. But yeah, they have to do it. They have to figure something out because they want to put more players and better players on this team. Unless they expand the rosters of every single game to 40, you got to figure it out. You have to cut some players and send them on their way. It's not easy, but you have to do it. Just cut the cord and let them go.
I know, right? They don't want to make a wrong call. They don't want to let the wrong guy go. They don't want to make a bad decision.
Out.
I get that.
Love of God, this is what baseball is all about. Sack up and trade them.
I love that. Sack up and trade them. Make that a t-shirt. Speaking of t-shirts, by the way, just a quick digression. On our Slack channel, one of our Good Fight writers came up with the greatest t-shirt idea. I mean, did you see this?
I did. I don't know if I agree that it's a great t-shirt idea. I'm not sure I want us to in any way glorify what has been dubbed Gabermetrics.
Gabermetrics. I think it's hysterical.
Unless
I think it's
there's a picture of like a...
Ethan Whitty came up with that. It's just, I think it's terrific.
Picture of like,
it.
Just like the top part, like from the eyes up of a dude wearing a Phillies cap and his eyes are rolled up into his head.
Oh gosh, I think it's fantastic. I don't do t-shirts anymore. If I did, I'd be working on that tonight, I'll tell you what. Let's move on. Ben Siegfried at PSolax5699. He asks, how do you improve the team's lack of fundamentals, defense, base running, etc.? Do you bring in more coaches? At times it seems like they forgot everything they learned in Little League. And I can't disagree with that. And I thought Ethan, who we just mentioned a minute ago, tweeted a question to me, to us, talking about what would it take to pry Davey Lopes out of retirement.
Davey!
We miss you, Davey. We miss you so much.
So much.
Because when Davey was here, that... You know, the base running ran like a Swiss clock, man. It was just something else, and the defense was really good. I am at a loss, Liz, to talk about how this team was so bad with fundamentals. A lot of it has to do with guys playing out of position, but some of it did not. And it's just crazy how often there would be mental lapses, how often there would be physical errors when there shouldn't be. Easy plays. We're not, you know, you play some guys out of position. I don't expect these guys to have phenomenal range running all over the field, but I expect them to catch the balls hit right at them, to be able to know how to turn the double play, to cover third base if you're shifting and a runner steals second. You know, this kind of stuff, the fundamentals, all these things should have been practiced. And I don't know what they did down in spring training. I remember early in spring training last year, we heard about the fact that they had cameras up in the bullpens to, you know, help catchers out with framing and all that stuff. It all seems really fine, all well and good. But I really wonder how much, you know, does doing infield practice before games, do they bring that back, Liz? I mean, should they be doing that kind of stuff? Different coaches, more quality control? I'm at a loss because I think the Phillies and Andy McPhail were at a loss.
I think some of it's an over-reliance on it's going to sound weird, an over-reliance on data to make good decisions, to take advantage of what they think players are just capable of, instead of, you know, trying to get them to be solid in what they already know or what they should know and to be better. That's that's a completely unfounded thing. It's just a suspicion I have. But the reliance of data is, it's not reliance. I think that's fine. It's an over-reliance on data to make every single decision, which I think is just a bad way to run a baseball team. I think there needs to be a blend. And I'm hopeful that Gabe Kapler wants to find that blend. I don't believe that's actually true, but I'm hopeful anyway. As far as fundamental, I mean, there are different types of fundamentals. There's defense fundamentals. There's the type of fundamentals you think of when you say fundamentals. And then there is base running and a different type of baseball that the Phillies and other teams seem unwilling to play. You know, like, let's not try and hit every ball out of the park. Let's try for some loopers. Let's try for some infield hits. Let's try bunting, kids.
Let's try and hit the ball through the hole in the shift on the other side of the infield, like we saw Freddie Freeman do.
Let's try manufacturing a run.
Once in a when you're struggling, yes. When you're struggling to score, sometimes a run is good.
I mean, for me, regardless, like, I think it is a good idea. Just to, every team is playing this type of baseball. When is someone going to realize that it's probably a good idea for someone to try playing another type of baseball if all they're doing is being outplayed?
Yeah, I think, and you got to play to the strengths of the players you have too. That's the other thing.
I think that's missing on this team somewhat. You need to look at your player's strengths and build a game plan around that instead of expecting everyone to bow to the launch angle god, your false god.
And you know, maybe,
to me that they just want to shove players in these molds.
And maybe that's part of the experimentation. Maybe those are some of the changes that Matt Klentak was talking about. Something like that, an alteration of the philosophy of what to do with the players that you have. Maybe you spend this year experimenting, trying to get everybody to make your system work. Whereas maybe now, once you've seen, okay, Aaron Altair sucks at trying to do the launch angle thing. Let's just let him be Aaron Altair, even if Altair's back. I don't even know if Altair's going to be back next year. But with King, whoever it is, all the players who struggled, let's not focus on trying to make them do the things that we think need to be done. Let's kind of, you know, let them work their own thing and see if we can help them along in that regard. There's a mix, there's a molding together of all these different things. And, you know, I don't know if John Mailey and the other group, that, as far as on the hitting side, are the right guys to do that. But they're going to get another crack at it this year, at it in 2019. So, you know, there are all kinds of different ways to improve fundamentals. And the Phillies need to try
them
all next year.
Good God.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more. We got time for one more. Kevin Geary at KMG5567 asked, do you think the Phils add a starting pitcher as a free agent? Corbin seems the best option. Who else do you like? Do you like Jay Happ on a short deal? Liz, I like both those guys. I think Patrick Corbin is destined to be a New York Yankee. Yeah, so, I mean, they desperately need a pitcher like him, and he wants to go there. I think that's
fait accompli. I think there's just really, there's no way he's not going to go to the Yankees. So we can just sort of say goodbye to that. I to be honest, I think maybe they add someone. I don't know if that's going to be a main priority. They could sign Cole Hamels, but I also think that the Cubs are going to bring him back automatically. And I think he'd go there willingly, too.
What do you think about Jay Happ? I mean, they had a chance to trade for Jay Happ at the trade deadline and decided not to.
They had a chance to trade for a lot of dudes at the trade deadline, and they didn't. Instead, they picked Aaron Loop.
That was one area where they really missed the ball at the trade deadline, where I have an issue with Matt Klentak and what they were doing. I mean, Matt Klentak talked about knowing that these starting pitchers were going to be passing innings limits and just decided, well, let's just roll the dice and see what they can do. And, you know, it was fairly predictable. What happened in the starting rotation in late August and September was predictable. could be because people predicted it, and it happened. I will throw one name out there that gets talked about a little bit, but that's Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw opts out of his deal with the Dodgers, which I don't think he'll do, but there's an it's a non-zero chance he will. I mean, I think it's a possibility that he opts out. If Clayton Kershaw becomes available, I think that's the only other free agent option I would anticipate the Phillies going towards. Otherwise, I think if they bring in a starting pitcher, maybe they try and get a reclamation project like they had in years past, or they try to trade for somebody with some of their minor league capital and some of the young position players that they have to move. But if they're going to go after a free agent, it's probably going to be only if Clayton Kershaw opts out of his deal.
I actually have never been crazy about Hap. I don't know what it is. He's never really clicked with me. I've never thought he was really that big of a deal from the time early on. I was just never terribly impressed with him. And he's good. And if the Phillies go for him, that's great. But if they don't, I'm not going to be heartbroken. I actually think we're going to end up sticking mostly with what we've got right now. I'm almost positive. Personally, I don't think they're going to add anybody.
See, I think they need to swap out one of Pivetta or Velasquez. I don't think they want to either, but they're leaving themselves really vulnerable by having both of those guys in the rotation at the same time, because both of those guys have the same issues. They're erratic and a little bit on the unreliable side, and they will wear out a bullpen, both of those guys being in the rotation at the same time.
They don't want to choose, it's going to be fascinating and terrifying to see what they do. Because they really don't want to choose between those guys because they had multiple chances. I think that's one of the reasons they didn't go for anybody at the deadline is because they're like, I think we'll just roll with what we've got because we don't want to risk being wrong.
Yeah. No, it's true. And you could have put Pivetta in the bullpen, and maybe that's a way they fix the bullpen is to move Pivetta to the bullpen. But I think Pivetta showed you too much as a starter to automatically just throw him into the bullpen. I think he needs another season to see if there's really anything there as a starter. So gun to my head, I wouldn't be able to tell you which one I would rather have right now.
Me either.
If I had to choose one, I just couldn't, you know, I would take, if I took a guess, it'd be 51-49. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't come up with a reasonable guess, but I do think the starting rotation has a bit of a hole. It has a vulnerability with both of those guys in there next year. And I think that kind of played itself out this year. It was just a little bit hard for the rotation, especially in the second half, to maintain consistency because you had one of two guys in there that would be on for a month and then off for an entire month. And so that's why I think maybe adding another starting pitcher, somebody that's got a little bit more reliability to them. And they got to hope Jake Arrieta bounces back a little bit next year and help out with some of that. So, well, anyway, listen, this has been a really good mailbag episode. Liz, do you have any final thoughts on any of these issues or anything else rolling around up in your mind?
I don't, but I'm excited. I'm pretty psyched for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's really
these
cool.
Questions, I'm done with all these questions. I'm on to playoffs now.
Playoff baseball. Yeah, the division series are just about all wrapped up. Not a lot of great series going on here in the division series, but the championship series should be good. And that's really when it really starts to get spicy. These championship series will be good. So I'm with you. I'm looking forward to some championship series coming up here. And then, of course, the World Series. And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that on the next Sunday night edition that we do. Hopefully we'll have Justin back in time for that one. But Liz, thanks so much for doing this once again. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, as always.
And folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Episode number 210 is in the books. Thank you to everybody who submitted a question to the mailbag, and especially to the $10 a month Patreon folks who got their questions in first. Again, make sure that you are checking out the Patreon. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season and see everything that we have to offer there. Also, subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. That way you get Hittin' Season and continued success and the dirty inning every time a new episode is ready to go. And ratings and reviews. Please leave those ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. You can only do 5-star ratings now, guys. That's just the new rules that Apple put up. You have to complain to them. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly. the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.